Well, we are to pheasant population and habitat statistics. Travis.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon.
Members of the Commission, Secretary Hepler.
Shut it off on me. Now you got me loud and clear. Good morning again. All right, well, I'm going to chat with you a little bit today about pheasants and specifically looking at pheasant habitat, kind of how that influences pheasant abundance, and ultimately how that influences hunting in the state. So we've got a lot to cover here in 15 minutes, so I did want to point you to some really good resources out there since we don't have time to delve into anything in super detail. But our pheasant management plan is a good resource. That's on our website. Also, there's a six-series pheasant ecology article that was originally in the Conservation Digest. That's also online. And also a recent publication that basically brings all the best science related to CRP and CRP-related programs and how that influences pheasants. That's not on our website, but I can send that PDF along to you if you're interested. All right, so what is pheasant habitat? Well, one way to think about pheasant habitat is kind of breaking it down into components or kind of looking at it a three-legged stool scenario. I look at the three main components as nesting and broodering habitat, food, primarily during winter, and winter cover. And really, it's these three components that kind of together is what makes pheasant habitat. So we'll start with some pictures. That's way more fun than looking at graphs and figures. So if we start with winter, which is apparently what we're in already here in early November, some of our primary pheasant winter habitat are tall, warm season grasses. That stuff that's over your head stays upright during the winter. Also, the cattail sloughs is kind of our bread and butter winter habitat over much of our pheasant range. Obviously, those aren't everywhere, but over a vast majority of our pheasant range, those are pretty important. And oftentimes, where we don't have those, shelter belts, especially shelter belts that are at least eight rows of good low-growing shrubs and cedars are particularly important and something we'll put on the landscape to help provide a winter habitat where it's not otherwise present. Now, if we move over to food, again, this is most generally limiting in winter. Most of the time, it's just waste grain from agricultural fields. We can also provide supplement through standing food plots, such as standing corn and milo and some other crops. Here's a pretty good food plot there that's next to a shelter belt. That's obviously really, really good, and you can see that corn is up and standing. That bottom picture is actually an example of a pretty poorly placed food plot where one winter storm here in the Dakotas pretty much covers up all that food. Finally, the nesting and broodering habitat. This is basically any type of herbaceous habitat that's about a foot tall by early May or so. For broods, it's also herbaceous habitat, but it's something that has a bit more open understory, some type of a habitat that the chicks can actually move through. And this is generally considered the most limiting resource for pheasants in most parts of its range, including here. And that's why we focus a lot of our management on this particular component of pheasant habitat. So if we look at some pictures here, just your general like a CRP field or any type of herbaceous cover is functioning as a really good habitat. This is maybe the nesting habitat that you're most familiar with. But wheat fields and oat fields can't be overlooked. They're often a very important nesting habitat and can actually produce a pretty good majority of our pheasants in certain landscapes. And I'll show a case study in a little bit that really highlights the importance of small grain fields. And also when I get to talk about some of the trends in agricultural practices, we'll be thinking of small grains again as those trends have really changed over time. Finally, here's a picture of some prime, what I call brood habitat. This is actually a food plot that was on one of our GPAs that we did the easiest thing you could do and did nothing, let that come up to weeds. You can think about all those plants growing a lot of bugs, but also a real open understory there so pheasants can really move through that type of a habitat. So that's a pretty cool practice there and what a lot of our prevent plant acres on the landscape look like this past year as well. So we come back to this kind of three-legged stool scenario or demonstration. Really what these make up is a favorable pheasant landscape. each one of those pheasant habitat types really doesn't do a lot on its own. You can have the best nesting habitat in the world in a bad landscape, you're not going to have a lot of pheasants. You can have a food plot in a really poor landscape, and you're not going to have a lot of pheasants. We really need to be thinking about pheasant habitat as components that make up a landscape. So I want to show you an example of a really favorable pheasant landscape. This was about a 15-mile by 15-mile portion of southern Lyman County. It's a place we did a pheasant study here about 7 or 8 years ago. And the colors you want to pay attention to here are the yellow is CRP, and the red is row crop, and the two shades of brown are wheat, either spring wheat or winter wheat. And if you look at that and you think about it, if you threw a dart at that map and drew a half-mile circle around it, you'd have every component of that three-legged stool. You can't see the winter habitat on this map, but there's a lot of shelter belts and a few cattail sloughs in that landscape. And if we look at kind of what our radio-collared pheasants did in this landscape, it was pretty cool. If we just kind of direct your attention to the nesting data here, we had 55% of our successful nests came from CRP. Another 30% came from spring wheat and winter wheat. So that's pretty significant when 30% of your successful nests are coming from an agricultural field. That's pretty substantial. And if you look at that other category, which would be hay fields, right-of-ways, trees, and pastures, only 15% of the successful nests, even though it was about 45% of the available upland. So the take-home message here, CRP and winter wheat are pretty important to have in the landscape for nesting habitat. So we take a step back and even look at the landscape at an even bigger scale, just a 10,000-foot map of South Dakota. Everything in green there is grass. Everything in brown is some type of a crop. And we obviously have some gradients in South Dakota that influence habitat and influence where we have pheasants and how many we have. Some of these gradients are, as you move west, we have obviously a drier climate, more grass in the landscape, but the grass is typically shorter, less cropland, and more wheat in rotation. Also, as you get into particularly western South Dakota, our winter cover becomes a bit more isolated and probably a little bit more limiting in western portions of South Dakota. So you can almost see from space maybe where these grass and cropland landscapes really are mixed is really the heart of our pheasant range. Here I've highlighted the top 20 harvest counties in the state, and you can almost see just those counties that look like a shotgun pattern of grass and crop are really the large-scale habitats that are going to be most productive for pheasants. But we know that grass isn't all the same, and CRP grass is particularly important, as I showed a little bit ago. And this is just a standardized map of basically how much CRP we have in a county based on percent of county. And you can see we have pretty good representation of CRP in those counties that had our top 20 pheasant harvest. But with a keen eye, you also noticed a lot of our northeastern South Dakota counties have a lot of CRP, and a lot of those don't make the top 20. And there are some reasons for that, and it probably has a lot to do with the landforms up here in the northeast, where a lot of our wetlands are more permanent water. We don't have the cattail sloughs that we have 50 miles west of here. So in general, the far eastern part of the state is a little bit less productive than the James River Valley and the Missouri River Valley. So when we talk about CRP, I think it's important to look at CRP through history and how that's kind of influenced pheasant populations. But it's also important to look at the predecessor of CRP, which was the soil bank program. So basically, this chart's just showing our roadside survey data in red, basically from 1950 to present. And those green bars are either Conservation Reserve Program acres or soil bank acres. And as you can see, when we put soil bank on the landscape, our pheasant population quickly responded. When those acres expired and went back to cropland, we didn't have that undisturbed nesting habitat. The population went down again. CRP went on the landscape. It was a little bit of a delay in response, but we eventually had a pretty high pheasant population again. There's a lot of noise in that data. Weather obviously influences a lot of our year-to-year variation in pheasants, but if you just pop the averages up there, it kind of helps tell the story. Basically, during the CRP or the soil bank era, we had about three times more pheasants as far as our roadside counts than we did the time period when we didn't have it. And about, if you look at the CRP era, it was about double. So although there's some ups and downs in both of those eras, there's pretty good evidence here that's a pretty important driver for our population. We also know we have a changing landscape, particularly when we look at CRP. We've lost about 35% of our CRP since 2007, so that's over a half million acres. That sounds like a lot, but when we start delving into the numbers with some other habitat types, it's just a drop in the bucket. And if we look at the combined acreage of hay, small grains, and CRP, we've lost 5 million acres just since 1990. So that's about equivalent to about 500 acres a day for the last 28 years, which is, you know, almost a section a day. If we look at some other snapshots in time of just grasslands, such as pasture land, we have a little bit more spotty data for this. 1982 to 1997, one study found a loss of 1.8 million. Another study just from 2006 to 2012 saw a similar amount. So we're talking about 300,000 acres a year loss, or 820 acres a day kind of during that time period, which is pretty astonishing. Again, when we were talking about wheat earlier as an important pheasant habitat, in 1988, I think I was 5 years old, there was similar amount of wheat and small grains in the landscape as row crops. Right now, 5 acres of row crop for every acre of small grain on the landscape, so that's a huge change that's happening. We also see more permanent water, especially in northeastern South Dakota. I think the basically started getting wet there in the 80s, hasn't stopped. One study from 2006 to 2012, you know, found a 23% increase in permanent water, and pheasants don't live in water, and cattails don't grow in deep sloughs either, so there's implications there. So if we look at some of these numbers added up, you know, if we look at a few of these studies, we could be looking at a 8 million acre loss since the 80s in habitat, and one study that kind of quantified on where that was, right smack dab in our primary pheasant range has lost a lot of habitat. So let's switch gears. We've talked about habitat, we've talked about pheasants. Let's talk a little bit about how that trickles down to hunting. And some of the questions you know might have is pheasant abundance correlated with harvest or hunter success? Or does pheasant abundance influence hunter participation? You know, the hunters that we have coming to our state or our residents hunting here. So we just start out with just a correlation between our roadside surveys and just total harvest. Not surprising if you have any faith in our survey as representing our pheasant population, you see a pretty good correlation there. When we have more pheasants, we put more in the bag. Of course, this could be due to individual hunters doing more or doing better, or it could be due to just having more hunters in the landscape. So we'll run into that next. So if we look at the individual hunter, again, when we have a higher pheasants per mile survey, our individual hunter, on average, does better. Again, a pretty good correlation there. So we look at total hunters. Again, this correlation still stands up pretty good. When we have a higher pheasant abundance, all hunters combined, this is resident and non-resident, seem to respond, and we have more hunters. Where things start to fall apart is when we look at resident hunters. So if we look at that same correlation for resident hunters, all of a sudden that trend line is much flatter, and you see you have points way above trend, way below trend. And what I've done here is highlighted those bottom 6 points are the last 6 years. And that should be pretty alarming, where that is way out of trend. So there's something changing here where all of a sudden the number of pheasants in the landscape isn't driving how many resident pheasant hunters we have, and that's pretty concerning when you think about we put habitat on the ground to produce pheasants for the hunters, and all of a sudden that simple model is breaking down. And if we look at 1990, we had a real similar pheasants per mile index back then as we do right now, 70,000 hunters. Looking at some of the preliminary numbers from this year, we'll be lucky to make this chart. So we're going to be right down here somewhere, so it's unfortunate. Finally, if we look at resident hunters and trend through time, we see actually a tighter correlation with hunters through time than we do with the actual pheasants. I think you can almost look at this at two different time periods. 1990 to 2010, maybe this is the Tom and Tony era when they were running the show as the pheasant biologists, but pheasants were either increasing or at super high abundance. Our walk-in area program was hitting its stride. This was an awesome time to be an upland game hunter in this state. And it kept our pheasant hunters, our resident pheasant hunters, stable, but they certainly weren't increasing. 2010, unfortunately, about when I started, and I don't think it has anything to do with that, you can almost fit another trend line there. That's a pretty severe and alarming decline there. Obviously, fewer pheasants, loss of habitat, but it's a pretty alarming pattern. So finally, I wanted to finish with a slide here that kind of looks at some of our post-hunt sex ratio of pheasants, so basically showing what proportion of the pheasants did we kill during the season. basically going into the season, we're about 50-50, give or take. And this chart's just showing the postseason roosters to 100 hens. But basically, as that line goes up, that's just more available roosters that weren't harvested as a proportion. And this is a pretty high trend line all the way for back the last 25 years. There's more available roosters that aren't being harvested through time. This probably has something to do with our reduced participation, but it does kind of say that there's plenty of roosters out there that aren't being harvested, even though we wish our population was higher. So, conclusions. Well, habitat is key to supporting our pheasant population, especially CRP. Went through some numbers there that total habitat is declining. We know that hunter numbers are correlated with pheasant abundance, but this relationship is rapidly decoupling for our resident hunters. So it really comes down to this other component. It's not as simple as just putting habitat on the ground, producing pheasants, and we'll have hunters. There has to be more of a component of getting hunters out there through R3 and maybe some mechanisms that we haven't identified yet. But this isn't as simple as just producing pheasants. So with that, I'd take some questions and share a pretty cool picture there of what I think we all hope to see more of in the future.
Commissioner Whitmire.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Whitmire. Backing up on the 60 birds, maybe three slides, where you get up. We just hit 62, I think it was, roosters per 100 hens last year, first time. Trend line would have been 30 to 35 from the beginning of your chart there in the 80s until 2000-ish. So in the last 19 years, it's just successful of a hunt. I guess when I look at harvesting, for example, harvesting grain, we should have harvested twice as many birds last year on the same population. I guess that's my main takeaway on this is we could have harvested 2 million roosters last year on the same population as compared to what we would have done 20 years ago. Anyway, that's my main takeaway on that. Any thoughts straight off on other than hunter participation?
One thing that's interesting is we look at kind of 1990 or so is when CRP hit the ground, our pheasant population was increasing, and it made perfect sense to me that that ratio would increase as the population increased, that we would harvest a smaller proportion of the roosters as that population got higher. There's just more to go around. What's weird is after 2010 is that number kept going up, and I assume that's hunter participation. I don't have any other explanation, but even though our population was going down, the ratio kept going up, so those two lines separated at that point.
So what would all the factors be that we should look at? Some would say access, I suppose, for hunter participation. How about the messaging? We've had some discussion about that. And maybe you could explain, are the road counts essential? What do they do for us? It seems like, in some sense, they're bound to be lower and encourage people not to come, even though we have all these hundreds of thousands of pheasants that are still here to be shot. So if you have access, messaging, what else would be on the list of criteria that we need to look at now to turn this?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good question for someone that's more engaged with the R3 components and knows more of the R3 that's working, maybe what's not. And I don't think there's a silver bullet here. This is a major challenge for not just our state, but many other states and just the declining participation with small game. And I do have a slide here on the end that kind of illustrates how small game hunting decline is. Yeah, this is percentage of U.S. hunters who are small game hunters, and this is from states outside of South Dakota as well. So this is an issue that's widespread, and many states are talking about. And I don't think anyone has the perfect answer for it.
But it just seems that if the message got out that if this year is going to be kind of like last year, and there's going to be 500,000 roosters that are here to be shot, and so come and shoot them. Seems like that would be helpful and a good marketing strategy, but I don't know. Who do we ask about that?
I'm not the marketer. I just count them.
Yeah, I know you're not, and I'm, but it is a question we should talk about.
So no better person to bring in than Tom when we had pheasants coming out of our ears.
I'm not sure how to respond to that. Well, it is a valid point to show that during that short tenure they were at a historic high, but I think all those components are exactly right. I mean, there's more than one factor likely going on here with those surplus roosters, if we want to call it that, for opportunities for more harvest out there. And in our conversations, Commissioner Whitmire, you know, we even talked about just the unharvested crops and how things are later on certain years. And boy, there's no better example than this year, how that's going to play into the overall picture as well. Not saying that that is the number one driving factor this year, but it's certainly going to play into that. And but you're right, I think it's, we have to look at all of these things, and we're probably going to have to be creative, and messaging is part of that, and we're going to have to rely on our experts in that, from communications to R3, and probably work with some other folks even outside of our own agency to help find some appropriate answers and methods and means of I'll say marketing that and talking about all those pieces that come into play. You know, we all know and recognize at the end of the day, this is still the place to be to hunt pheasants. I mean, South Dakota is the place to be. It's the premier destination. And even in our down years, when there is not as many numbers and not as many birds harvested, we're still the best show in town. There's no doubt about that. And a couple of years back, when we had a down year of overall harvest, we still harvested more birds in South Dakota than all the surrounding states combined. And so again, that just reiterates the fact that even when conditions are down or tough for production or survival, we still have the ability to produce and have many great pheasant hunting opportunities in this state. So we've got some more thinking and discussing to do, Commissioner Whitmire, and finding those answers to some of those questions that you've brought forward. And they're great questions, and there's certainly things going on there. And I believe there are some things that we can control, both as an agency, commission, and as a state. And then we're always going to have those factors that are out of our hands and out of our control, and weather is one of those elements. But we'll have to continue to look at this and try to find some more answers.
So maybe we encourage people to come at Thanksgiving or December or whatever, you know.
Mr. Chair, I mean, we even see that anecdotally in some locations across the state. I think of some of the home area where I hunt, where I grew up. For many years, it was those first two, 3 weekends that was the rooster rush. I mean, there were people coming like crazy on those first 2 to 3 weekends. That has subsided, but yet what I've also noticed is that there tends to be, or it seems to be, that there's more hunters coming in that middle to late season as well. I don't know if they're looking at it from the standpoint of how harvest is progressing and that the hunting opportunities will likely become better and more successful later on when some of those row crops are taken out. Do they prefer coming when it is colder instead of when it's warmer? There were some hunters in a couple of those years when we had some extreme heat that just, they didn't come back anymore because of those conditions, and they started coming later. So again, we could probably sit down here and write a laundry list of potential factors that play into this, but to your question, again, it's continuing to tell the folks that we have some great opportunities here, not only the birds to harvest, but also, as you mentioned, the places to go hunt as well, from our own properties to other federal properties to private lands that we lease to the walk-in area to just private landowners that are going to open their properties for hunting opportunities out there.
Yeah, I mean, it's encouraging. Some of this message is encouraging, and know, we have work groups on this, that, and the other thing, but I wonder if we shouldn't set something up and set a deadline and a time frame, and so we come back and with some potential solutions and, you know, fixes or new approaches or something, instead of just hearing about the issues and then.
Sure.
So I think we should seriously consider that. Commissioner Sharp.
And Mr. Chair, I think you're on to something, and I know we've had spirited discussions on messaging, but Commissioner Whitmire a couple weeks ago or a couple months ago brought out the fact that the percent of harvest of roosters out there is actually quite low, so our availability of roosters is really quite high. Your slides have pointed that out, and yet We really have got to reach out to tourism and a lot of the area organizations that get that news out, because in today's society we have a tendency to focus on the negative. So instead of saying we have a lot of roosters to get because they're a little hard to find right now, we put out that pheasant per mile is down by 43% over the years, because it's a fun headline to read with. Or our first weekend out, we only ended up with so many birds per hunter, and that's not a message that, you know, rings positive out there, and we have a tendency to focus on negative again in the news. Don't know why that is, but maybe that's how you get a headline. But the reality of it is, as you pointed out, if you're going to go hunting for pheasants, there's no better place than South Dakota. There's plenty of birds out there. Are they tougher to find? Do you need a good dog? That might be certainly true, but the opportunities are just endless in this state to get birds, and trying to get everybody to focus on the positive and what's available out there is, I think, where we really need to focus. And instead of this trying to point out some of the negative stuff, is just that they call it hunting. It's for a reason. It's not called getting. So, but I think you're onto something, and we need to focus as a department, as well as try and work with surrounding other agencies and people in northeastern South Dakota, that the message is positive. This is the place to come, and we really need to start beating that drum pretty hard, I would say.
So, okay, we'll put together a group and work with the department and come up with a timeline and get back in another couple of months with some ideas. Maybe, because if we need something from the legislature, I'm not saying we do. I mean, that's a timeline to consider, and it's a big deal, as we all know, and a lot to work with. I mean, a whole lot to work with. So,
yeah, Mr. Chairman, we'd be more than happy to work with you as a subset of the commission and the appropriate staff, and look forward to that opportunity to come up with some of those ideas and generate some more moving forward.
Yep. Okay. Good. Any other comments, questions? Great. Thank you, Travis.
Yep. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Why don't we, how long is the pheasant opener? I bet. You want to do that and then we'll be done, or you want to wait till the morning?
It's totally up to you. This was going to be very brief.
All right, let's do that, and then we'll start tomorrow with geese.
So, Mr. Chairman, South Dakota is the greatest place to hunt pheasants. That's my opening opening report.
Because we still have plenty of roosters.
We have lots of roosters. No, it again, like any other opener, it's a celebration time. Again, there's a lot of folks that came, like every other year, family, friends, acquaintances, colleagues. It is a tradition, and that opening weekend and those first 2 weekends is always a great time in South Dakota. Not going to talk about the numbers, as you just described, Commissioner Sharp, as well, but we certainly had folks that found success in the fields on opening weekend and that second weekend, and there were other locations where folks didn't do as well, and that was fully anticipated, and quite honestly, that happens on an annual basis depending where you're at. Certainly, as the season progresses here, we're all looking forward to more crops being harvested, because that will play into some higher levels of success later in the season. Weather always is an interesting factor of, you know, colder weather, rainy, snow, and how folks will do. But overall, it was a good opening weekend. When we looked at it from, just to give you some statistics without going on a negative side of here, but when we look at license sales from opening week, and that's always something that we look at, and both from the resident and non-resident, it is down slightly from comparison to last year. In particular, the non-residents looking at approximately a 7% decrease through the first 2 weekends. And usually when we see those types of statistics from past seasons, that typically follows through for the rest of the season, but we could see that could certainly bump up, and we'll see how that all plays out. In the same way on the resident license side, as Travis was just alluding to, in the long-term trend, this year too, through those first 2 weekends, we're down approximately the same percentage, maybe a little bit more from the resident side. But again, we've heard some great stories, and in fact, in areas, we've actually heard some really positive things of folks saying, we're seeing more birds than we really anticipated or what we expected. So that's really encouraging to hear. Folks are doing well. And again, some places folks are working hard. And so opening weekend was good. We had a fairly decent weather. And again, we'll see how the rest of the season progresses, but look forward to some more hunting opportunities, and folks should continue to do better and better as the season goes along. So again, keep it fairly brief, Mr. Chair, and we sure try to answer any questions that you have.
Questions, comments? People shoot like me, there's, I always say a pheasant has a 90% chance of survival if it gets up in front of you. Anyway, so we're done for the day, and we'll start at 8 in the morning with the presentation by South Dakota State on its pesticide study. Okay, thanks.